Hey, what's up? This is Steve Cardenas, a.k.a. Rocky the Red Power Ranger, and you are listening to Comics with Normies. Morphin' time. All right, welcome back to another episode of Comics with Normies. This is the show where I take a random yard sale found comic. I give it to a friend from my life who's not really in the comics all that much, and then we find out what their take on it is. I am Jared Albrick, aka the Yard Sale Artist, and this episode we're going to be talking about Superman number 350 from August of 1980, and we're going to be talking about it with my friend Grant Potts. Welcome to the show, Grant.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Although I thought my name had to be Normie to be on the show.
No, that's not a requirement.
Like Cliff Clavin's buddy on Cheers, but okay. just wanted to double check.
No, not a requirement. You're more than welcome to be here. My buddy Grant Potts, we're old military friends from back in what the kids call the day.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you know this, was a Wednesday.
All right, so let's meet Grant here. Let's get a little background on Grant. Grant, tell me a little bit about yourself, or what you want the people out there to know about yourself.
Well, as you said, we were Air Force buddies together. We taught at an Air Force school in Montgomery, Alabama, and that's how we met. Since then, I've since gotten out of the Air Force, and I've been an 8th grade ancient world history teacher for about 12 years in the Birmingham, Alabama area. And I play the saxophone. I'm not like, you know, in a band or anything. I'm kind of trying to regain that lost skill from high school. And I'm a big reader. I like Stephen King fiction. And
that in common.
That's true. And just about any book on history. And other than that, I like cats, which I know you have enjoyed 15 years of berating me about in a good-natured way. But
guys with cats, I don't know. If you're a listener and you're a guy who lives with cats, then just know that that's perfectly all right as long as you're not Grant Potts. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Well, cool. What history do you have with comic books? I know you're on the show because you're a normie, so we all know it's not going to be a lot, but what history do you have with them?
Well, as you already said, very little, but a little bit. It's very pointed and focused, I suppose. I had a Beetle Bailey comic book as a kid, which I bet I still have somewhere in my menagerie of junk in my house if I had to go search for it. It's probably from the mid-70s. And I think I may have mentioned to you the other day, I don't even know if I could read when I had it. I just liked paging through and looking at the pictures and stuff. But as far as more, you know, I was a little older, the Batman 1989 with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson came out and when I was like 17. And so that was, I remember that movie being a huge hit, and I remember seeing it in the theater. I think I saw it in the theater, like the day of Thanksgiving or the day after, with a good friend of mine. I remember having the soundtrack, and I remember
Prince, whoop, whoop.
Yeah. And, well, there was a U2 song on it, though. Was that also that one, or was that a different?
Not to be a quick correct, but there was a U2 song on the Batman Forever soundtrack.
I had that on a CD single, I think. So I didn't have the Prince soundtrack.
All right. Well, you're no longer welcome on the show.
Yeah,
thanks for saying.
All right. Well, I officially lost my normie, whatever that means. Anyway, no, but there was one other thing I was going to say. I can't remember. Oh, I've actually watched a good portion of the Arrow series on Netflix. I really liked that a lot. I thought that was pretty slick.
Okay, cool.
But other than that, really not much. Pretty much.
So you're into Arrow. Of course, you've gone to see the Marvel movies.
That's true. It goes without saying almost. Most of them. In the last few years, I've kind of missed a handful of them, but yeah.
We were actually, we took a break from watching Doctor Strange to record this episode. So he'll get back to Doctor Strange.
Which I enjoyed very much.
Yeah, that is a good one. All right, so that's Grant's history with comic books, and he very graciously and kindly decided to jump into Superman number 350, which is the August 1980 issue by DC Comics. And we will get into Grant's thoughts and feelings as a normie into some randomly placed comic, Superman number 350, on the other side of this podcast promo break. We'll be right back.
enter, one man leaves.
I must put it.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey everybody, it's Roy Charlemagne Cleary here from the Silver and Gold Podcast. I want to tell you about a new show we got coming out called DC v. Marvel. We have this thing called a randomizer. It randomly selects a Marvel character and pits them versus a random selected DC character. Whenever this happens, it compels me and my co-host from Silver and Gold, Jay Jones, to tell you who's going to win said combat because we can't reset the randomizer until we do so. We don't do it alone. We bring in a third guest to help analyze the fight. So check that out coming soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed. The beta test episodes are going up now, but in the future, we're going to have more refined episodes with some of your favorite podcasters, super comic fans, captains of industry. They're all going to come and join us on DC v. Marvel. So look for those soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed.
Can I talk?
You've said enough, Jay Jones.
We didn't say anything.
Yeah, but we're going to do the podcast now.
I want to say something.
No more talking.
And we are back. We're here with Grant Potts, our normie for this episode. And we're going to be looking at Superman number 350 from August of 1980. This issue was written by Jerry Conway. It was penciled by the legendary Kurt Swan with inks by Frank. Here we go. Charmante? I might have messed that up.
That's pronounced Charmante.
Oh, thank you, Grant.
I'm surprised you're not familiar with him, but I'll let that slide.
My bad. Anyway.
His name is why I picked that, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah. Grant's big on anchors. The letterer was Ben Oda. The colorist was Adrian Roy. And the editor was the legendary Julie Schwartz. Julie Schwartz was famous for high energy, especially like on covers, which, you know what? We're going to talk about that in a minute. So those are your credits for Superman number 350 from August of 1980. But before we get into that, we like to hop into our time machine real quick and find out. Grant Pott. What were you doing in August of 1980?
Well, interestingly enough, August is my birthday month, although it's at the very end of the month. It's August 27th, but I turned 8 that day. And I had a birthday party, although I think this very well was my 7th birthday. But I'm going to tell it anyway because I don't remember for sure anything else. But I did have a birthday party, and this is not quite comic book lore, but it's of the same ilk maybe. I had a party, and I remember opening my gifts, and I opened up a Star Wars land speeder that a friend of mine gave me.
Nice.
And another buddy of mine just started laughing and laughing and laughing. And you'd think I would have been smart enough to figure out that he also got me the Star Wars land speeder. But I kept saying, you know, well, what are you laughing? What's so funny? Blah, blah, blah. And then it finally got to his. I'm like, hey, I got 2 land speeders. And I played with both of those things. A lot. I really liked them because they really did look like they were hovering on the floor.
Yeah,
the wheels
one.
Were really thin and on the inside of it.
Yeah, I had one of those.
And I thought that was pretty slick.
That is great.
And I didn't have a lot of other Star Wars toys. Anyway, and I know that's off the topic, but...
Nah.
And really, truly, that probably was August of 79, but oh well.
We talk nerdy Star Wars here from time to time, too.
In August of 80, I was playing with my Lance Speeder that was a year older. My Lance Speeder.
Yeah, there you go. He either received it that year or he was playing with it.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I was like 3 1/2 because you're a lot older than me. You're just ancient.
That's true.
You said you were an ancient history teacher.
That's true. And I can remember some of those events.
But yeah, okay. That's pretty neat that you got the land speeder twice. Yeah,
and I didn't have a lot of Star Wars toys, so I remember really digging those.
Oh, cool.
I think I said that a second ago. Sorry if I didn't.
Anyway. That's all right. That's all right. That land speeder probably, if you had it new in the box, you should have saved the second one new in the box.
That's true.
Got a hefty ransom on eBay. All right. Let's get into Superman number 350 from August of 1980. And Grant's going to give us the overall plot summary of the issue. It's the hardest part for the normie to do on each of my episodes, but I think he can do it. Grant, take it away. What's Superman number 350 all about?
Well, it all starts with this young high school kid who goes on a field trip and he goes to a He goes to a place where there's a bunch of spiders, and he gets bitten by one. Oh, wait, no, sorry, wrong one. All right.
Normie jokes. Those are comic book normie jokes.
Yes, I know. And for the record, Jared is shaking his head in a shut up, Grant, very dramatic way. Anyway, all right, the real comic
I'm proud book. Of you for knowing the origin of Spider-Man, though, so I'll take it.
Okay, this is, you know, this is literally the only comic book I've read on Superman, but it came across as rather unusual. He's invited to a college reunion, and he gets there and he meets up with some old guy, a friend of his that was actually kind of like more like a frenemy, like somebody he didn't really like, but they tolerated each other. And he kind of and then he meets up with an old flame of his too, which actually may have been a current flame.
It's Lana Lang, his high school girlfriend. I get the impression that Clark and Lana are sort of dating, that they've gone to this event together.
Yeah. Okay. So anyhow, so. It starts out with a very weird hot air balloon accident in which he saves a friend of his who was trying to land the balloon in the high school or in the college courtyard or something like that. And anyway, and then long story short, they're at this banquet and some very strange things happen by way of people disappearing. And so, as usual, Clark Kent appears to be completely ineffectual and no help at all, but it's because he's dodged the masses, and he changes into Superman, and he discovers that all of his buddies that disappeared, I can't remember, I think they were in different places, but they all reappeared again together in the same spot, basically in the same hall where they had been. And so they were kind of trying to figure out what was going on there. And the next thing I remember is weeks later, Lana and Clark are at some thing where this guy was speaking, and it was the same speaker who spoke at their college banquet, and he's demonstrating he has this matter spontaneous producer or something like that. I know I didn't say that right.
He can make stuff out of nothing.
Yes, there you go. And he's making things appear, and long story short, it doesn't quite go right, and the big climax is that what's happening is instead of things appearing, he's actually teleporting them from one location, and the places that the objects come from are associated with the same people that had disappeared. I'm not sure what the real point of that was, but that's where they came from. They were associated with people that were disappearing at the banquet. Long story short, it went out of hand, and a large building disappeared, and all sorts of people started plummeting to the earth, and Superman saved them all by flying in and stretching out his cape and basically making it into like a little... whatever it'd be.
Safety net.
There you go, safety net. And then it
was
kinda,
weird.
And then it kind of ended when, this is the part I don't remember honestly as well as others, but it ended with, you may have to help me out here a little bit.
It's weird, yeah.
Basically, there was some sort of discovery that all the people who disappeared may be turning into some weird freakish monster.
Made of like... interdimensional mental energy.
Yeah,
he got a weird one, folks. we love it when this happens on Comics with Normies, when you get these stories. And he did a great job with taking us through this pretty bizarre story.
I'm sure I missed some key details. Probably
not really.
Some people out there scratching their head going, what the heck is this story about?
It's kind of and if you read it, you kind of feel the same way. But yeah, essentially, he went to his college reunion. One of his college professors is sort of experimenting with interdimensional travel, which is why like 9 random people disappeared from the banquet. And then now he's like tied to those 9 people. Like when Grant was saying he was making objects appear out of nothing, they were always like tied to one of the 9 people that have been to the other dimension. And then the more he tried to draw, the more powerful like their connection became. And then their connection became an entity in and of itself, like a monster made of interdimensional. It was weird.
Well, and you summarized it far better than I did.
I don't know that I did, but it was weird. Oh, we did get a nice little cat fight between Lana Lang and Lois Lane. That was fun times. It's weird in this issue too, by the way. This is just an interesting side note to me. Grant and I both kind of came away from this issue like, it appears that Clark Kent is dating Lana Lang and that Superman is dating Lois Lane. Like, wait, what? That's...
So depending on who you are, you're either like, yeah, what a jackass, or all right, Superman.
Yeah, Superman. It's for the lady. It's a very un-Superman-like thing to do to date 2 people at once, but whatever. You did a fine job of recapping
Thank you.
A pretty bizarre story.
I have to admit, I was kind of like, if this is the norm of Superman comics, I might be choosing another genre.
Fair enough. I mean, especially...
I didn't dislike it. It was just different. Not what I expected.
They got really experimental with things pretty much from the 60s all the way until Superman's kind of reboot by John Byrne in the late 80s. They kind of... grounded him, for no pun intended, grounded him a little more after the John Byrne reboot of the 80s.
So well, by experimental in the 60s, you mean hopped up on acid. I think it makes perfectly good sense.
There you go. Yeah, I'm not going to say that any of these people were hopped up on acid, but it's definitely like sort of a trippier story. All right, some standard questions we ask on this show of comics. I forgot the name of my own show. Comics with Normies. We ask some standard questions just to get the normies' point of view. So let's run down the standard questions. Okay, right. Given what you've read, what do you think happened before this issue, like in the issue that came out before this one?
Well, I think he may have gone on that steel trip and gone to the spider place. And, no, you know, I don't have a clue. I'll be the first to admit, I'm really not the most creative guy in the world when it comes to creativity, as you can tell since I used that word twice.
That's great.
I really don't know.
I don't either. It seems fairly self-contained.
That really, there's nothing that, yeah, it seemed very isolated, maybe. It didn't make any references to anything from the past.
I agree. I think the only thing we can assume is that he got invited to his college reunion.
Yes, that's true.
Pretty much all we can assume.
And he probably helped people out of a jam at some point.
That's what Superman does. Now, we did end on a bit of a cliffhanger. We had sort of that bean, that sort of monster, looked like it was very threatening. That's probably the cover of the next issue.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Yeah.
There's an ad in the middle of the book that looks like that might be the cover of the next issue. What's it say? That's Superman number
51.
So, yeah, we do get a sneak peek at the cover of the next issue in an advertisement in the middle. And it is exactly what we thought it was. It is an energy being made up of those 9 people that disappeared into the other dimension. It's really weird looking. The energy being's made of, like, pink. He's made of pink.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to describe. So the next question, standard question for Comics with Normies, for the Normie, is what do you think will happen next? And you got a little bit of a clue looking at that next cover.
Yeah. And I, for the record, I won't be doing the dumb Spider-Man joke again. I think he's going to fight that monster and probably save the 9 people from their quasi-imprisonment within the monster, or connections to the monster, whatever word you want to use there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And some sort of epic battle.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I don't have 351, but all my comic spider senses are tingling. I'll bring the Spider-Man jokes back to tell me that's where we are headed. This is the next portion of the show where I ask the normie. This one's probably going to be a little easier because I'll ask the normie. We don't always read mainstream comics like Superman. I'll ask them, what powers and abilities do you think our main hero has? Now, Superman's really famous, but we talked about this before recording. You said, hey, I'd like to take a shot at guessing as many of Superman's powers and abilities as you could. So go ahead.
I'm sure there's going to be one or two I missed, but I think he can fly and can probably run very fast. Although that's really more of a Flash thing, I can't think of.
They both run fast.
Yeah, I mean, does Superman ever do that in any of the movies?
That's what I don't remember. In the movies, I'm trying to remember if he ever does the sprint running thing. I think he flies most of the time.
Yeah. So
he did
that,
a lot of running on the Smallville TV show because he didn't realize he could fly yet.
Gotcha. Oh, and that's right. In the movie, he runs alongside the train.
Yeah, that's right.
Forgot about that.
Look at you with the better Superman memory.
Well. Looks like the student has become the
no. Who's the normie now?
Okay, so flying, running fast, which is, you know, albeit not very often. I know he's bulletproof from... I'm pretty much just going by the movie here.
That's fine. That's fairly
X-ray
accurate.
Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Heat vision?
Heat vision. He used it in this issue.
Yes, he used both of those. And then I know there's probably one or two I'm forgetting.
Nailed... the majority. He's got like the freezing breath. Like he can blow and cool things down.
That I don't think I ever knew.
You're right. He's borderline invulnerable. He can survive in space. He's got super hearing. He can hear really well.
I'm sorry. What was that?
Anyway, you did very well on Superman's powers.
Well, thank you.
I would say, and I'm probably stealing something that we're going to talk about later on. But the most bizarre thing that I saw in this issue was like his cape can apparently stretch to like 10 times its size.
That was
so weird.
That was not something I expected. Because certainly I was like, all right, I imagined him flying at the speed of light and catching everybody one at a time.
That's what I thought would happen.
Like, you know, because I know he turned the Earth's rotation, you know, backwards in the first Superman movie and all. So yeah, that was like, oh, okay. Apparently the cape is like a giant trampoline. Yeah.
Yeah, like when the building disappears, there's like 40 people in it, and they all start free falling, and he swoops down and he stretches his cape out to like 10 times its size, and catches all these people on like basically like big trampoline or safety net. And I'm just like, he's Superman. He's super fast. I don't know why he couldn't just kind of fly and just kind of catch them all. And the whole stretchy cape thing is just weird. I also like the way that he caught, like, if you look at the way it's drawn, it looks like he basically caught the people that were in the top half of the building. So if you were on, like, floors 2 through 12, well, I guess you just took a tumble. Look at these guys. Like, what happened to these guys?
Yeah, all right. They'll break their legs, but they won't die. I'll get these people.
He did super triage.
That's funny. I don't think I would have ever noticed that. It was a good idea. That's funny.
Just broken ankle.
Sorry, y'all. Hope you get out of the hospital quickly.
Superman's got to make a tough decision. Anyways, what was your favorite moment in the story? Like, just story-wise, you're like, oh, that was kind of neat.
I don't know if I'd say a favorite, but one that stood out to me.
All right, I'll take it.
One that stood out to me. Okay, and you'll have to forgive me here. But I've always had my extremely limited exposure to comic books. I always figured the dialogue was not very sophisticated and fair. And, you know, since they're geared toward kids, I always figured it was pretty elementary, lack for lack. But there's this one page here where Lana and Lois are talking, and they actually are having a fairly sophisticated discussion and actually – you know, I just remember thinking this sounds more like a novel than a comic book, and they're probably all that way, and I just noticed it. But that kind of caught my eye. It's basically they're kind of talking about how Lois is like these nervous tendencies, and she's trying to psychoanalyze herself on why she can even be a little like cranky toward people and stuff. I just found that I was like, wow, they're kind of getting real human here.
Yeah,
and that just stuck out to me.
Oh, very cool, very cool. And
that and Superman just swooping in and picking up Lois Lane and leaving. I guess I just thought, okay, well, it's not just the emergencies he gets in his getup. It's also convenience. So.
Yeah.
Which I guess he did in the movie, too. So I got just anyway.
Well, I'm glad that you kind of got your eyes open to the fact that the writing in comics is not
It was much more sophisticated than I expected it to
Yeah, and yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. In fact, it's funny because Grant and I both read this issue yesterday in preparation for today's episode. And there was a word in there we had to Google, and it was
Zaftig?
Zaftig? Yeah, I think it was Zaftig. It was back when he gets to the somewhere. Yeah, I think it's right before that. Like, this guy is clowning Clark Kent.
So you're here with that wimp Clark Kent, huh, Lana? How does Zaftig a kid like you get stuck with a lame clown like him?
A Zaftig kid like Lana get stuck with... We were like, what's a Zaftig? Like,
yeah,
we
both I thought it was some sort of ethnic thing.
Yeah, we both... Listen, both
like
of us...
somebody a Czech from the Czech Republic or something.
Both of us have master's degrees. We're pretty smart guys. But we were like, I have no idea. So we had to Google it. And basically, for our listening audience, a Zaftig, which is what? Z-A-F-T-I-G.
Correct.
Is a, like, full-figured woman. Like,
buxom
curvy.
Lady.
Buxom and curvy. So it's a weird compliment word. Like, oh, you're a real Zaftig. I feel like you get punched for that instead of, like, why, thank you, sir. Anyway, yep, comics, you can learn stuff.
I might have to start using that word with some attractive women I know just to see how smart they are.
See how that goes.
See how they react.
I'm interested on the feedback.
Or somebody who's not attractive whatsoever and seeing, oh, well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, report back to us on your Zaftig.
Yeah, somehow I think
on the POTS Zaftig experiments. Okay, in the story, and there's probably more than one, but you can pick the biggest one or however you want to play this. What part of the story or parts left you just like scratching your head like, what the heck is going on?
Well, where it really took a big turn is when the Green Lantern showed up and they were eating Twinkies. But for those of you at home, I didn't know they put ads in the comic books that looked just like the comic. And And I just remember going, why is the Green Lantern suddenly showing up? And Jared had to explain to me, oh, that's actually an ad. And I thought that was rather witty.
He was talking about, I'm sure the old school comic fans will remember the Hostess ads. And the Hostess ads would feature like a different hero like Green Lantern or over in Marvel. We've seen them with the FF or with Iron Man or Spider-Man or whatever. And what's neat about them, for those of you who remember, is they're drawn in such a way that they're of the quality of the book you're reading. So I think we were talking about how it's kind of intended for kids to almost stumble into the fact that they're in a commercial. And, well, not just kids. Grant was like, yeah. He actually looks up to me. He's like, what is the Green Lantern doing here?
Well, the funny thing is I didn't even start reading it. I just went, wait a minute. They just threw this green. What I thought it was. I thought it was a preview or advertisement for another comic. And they just put one in here. And I thought, oh, that's a little abrupt. And then you showed me. Wait, no, if you look, they're actually eating Twinkies in the last picture. And I was like, oh, that's great.
And you've been craving Twinkies all day ever
that's
since.
True.
Those are funny. But yeah.
More to the point of your question and the spirit of what you were asking. Okay, here's something scratching your head, you said.
Right.
When the college professor was speaking to some science symposium and he was making the matter appear when he was really making it teleport, he kept explaining, or at least he was thinking in his head, he might have even said it out loud at one point, that he wanted the objects to slowly get bigger. Or let me rephrase. Did I have that right? He wanted each subsequent object to be bigger than the last. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining how that wasn't quite working out. And I just kept thinking, well,
why?
What's the point of that? Other than maybe that was just as his way of verifying he was in control of things. I don't know. But
no,
not that I thought it had, you know, screwed up the story or anything. I just remember going, I wonder what the point of that.
I had the same question, too. I feel like it might be answered in the next issue. But, like, Grant was saying, he's giving his science lecture, and he's like, I'm going to make bigger and bigger objects disappear. And as it cuts away to the scenes where things are disappearing from, bigger things are disappearing. Like, for example, the whole building disappeared, and Superman had to save all his people. But what he got out of that on his end was like a pencil sharpener. Like, the bigger the object, he may disappear somewhere else when it would reappear at his science convention, it would be some small object. And I didn't get that either. I was like, what's going on with that? But I guess we'll maybe find out in 351.
Perhaps.
We have talked exhaustively about the bizarre story that the comic book has. It's still insanely creative, but it's a little weird. So let's talk about the art. Let's forget about story for a minute. Okay. Look at the presentation. Let's start where you start with all comics on the cover.
You'll laugh at why I picked this cover. Because the first thing I saw is there's these three people that are standing in the building that just disappeared, and they almost look like they're definitely trying not to fall, but they look like they're really badly dancing. Especially this guy on the right. It looks like it's like, you know, Elaine from Seinfeld, kicks and thumbs, you know. And I just remember looking at that going, what's that? And then I looked at the bigger picture, oh, the building disappeared. But it just made me laugh, so I thought, oh, they were bad dancers. That and just, you know, it had more of a, I guess I think I just liked the picture better than others. I don't really know why, other than perhaps maybe. I think it was because it only had like one, like a lot of other super comic books have the superhero and the villain or something. This just had the superhero and a bunch of fallen people.
Like it's just one simple situation.
Yeah.
And what I did with Grant is what I do with most people on the show. I laid out about a dozen or maybe 20 comics from my yard sale stack and said, pick one. And he gravitated toward this cover with a fair amount of confidence. So you were like, I like this one. And I was like, any particular reason why? And he said, I like the cover. The cover to 350, which I'll obviously post on Twitter and on Facebook when this episode is released, it's a pretty darn good drawing by, I think it's Ross Andrew, and it's inked by Dick Giordano. So, I mean, it looks good. And it's real high energy. It's Superman is flying in. Obviously, it's in the city, but this one giant building in the city is in the middle of disappearing, which is hard to draw. You can kind of see like
almost through, like blueprint.
Blueprint. You can kind of see through things, and people are starting to fall, and other people are becoming aware they're about to fall. They look like they're dancing. And Superman is like swooping in, and there's all these falling people. It does really create a sense of urgency and energy, and it's very colorful. They use a lot of different colors. Superman's swooping in, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people either falling or about to fall. There's a guy wearing yellow, a girl in pink, a guy in gray and orange, and there's a lot of use of color.
I just now noticed there's people in the building next door watching, like going, what the heck?
Yeah, like terrified next door. Like the building next door has just realized that their neighbors, the building is disappearing, and people are falling to their deaths. So there's like people looking out the window like, oh gosh. So there's a lot going on in the cover. And sometimes that's bad. Sometimes you don't want an overly busy cover, but this one just works.
It's not too much. Yeah, I like it.
It's good. We're going with good. We like it. Now, let's go to the interior art, just the story itself, which is a Kurt Swan. Kurt Swan drew about, I don't know, a million Superman comics. What were your feelings on the interior art? Did you like it? Did it just do what it needed to do? Did you think it was bad or...
Really and truly, nothing really jumped out at me. I mean, I didn't think it was bad or anything. And you know, you probably look at a comic book so much differently than I do because you are an artist. I'm far more just making sure I follow the story. But I liked it. I mean, it was the front page where the balloon was, I thought was kind of cool just because it was unusual. You just don't think of Superman flying around on a hot air balloon very often.
No.
But other than that, I don't know that really, I know I'm not really giving you much to work with here or saying anything terribly profound, but I don't know that there was anything that really jumped out at me. Although, and I know I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, as a history guy looking at a comic book from 1980, the ads were really intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's coming up.
So. We will talk about ads.
But so that actually stuck out to me probably even more than the artwork. Because I've always been that way with old newspapers and stuff. I collect old newspapers, and I've had to do some research in college involving old magazines and stuff. So that I tend to notice that a little bit more.
And I will agree with you. I think the art is Kurt Swan, so it's good. And Kurt Swan knew how to draw him some Superman. But this was an era, too, back in all the way into, gosh, probably mid-'80s, late-'80s, became the era of the artist. And art became very, very flashy and a huge, huge part of the story. And back in this day, as you saw, we were talking about earlier, they crammed so much into each page. There's not a lot of splash pages. Each page has, like, 8 or 9 panels worth of stuff. So you don't, Kurt Swan doesn't get to show off much, but what he does do, he does it at a very good and sufficient level. It moves the story along. There's nothing that looks bad. I don't think at any point either one of us was like, I can't tell what's going on here.
Oh, no. I mean, it's very
simple.
It does the job.
It does the job. And it looks fine. So that is the art. Now, let's look at what you wanted to talk about. We'll talk about the extras, or the more specifically, we're going to talk about the advertisements. What advertisements in Superman 350 jumped out to you?
Well, the very first inside the front cover, there's a picture or an ad for some die-cast Formula One kind of cars. And I'm about 99% certain I had one of them because I remember it had this Martini Racing line on the top of the windshield.
The Porsche 935, which says it was at Toys R Us for $7.68. Somebody was Mr. Moneybags back in 1980.
I don't know. I'd have to ask my folks about that one because I'm not absolutely certain, but I'm 95% I had that one. I got a kick out of the Sea Monkeys simply because they are often referenced in pop culture, you know, in a joking manner. And I listened to a podcast one time called Stuff You Miss in History Class, and they had a whole 30-minute episode about the history of sea monkeys. And of course, I was like, well, I gotta listen to that. And I never even knew they were shrimp until I listened to that, which made me, I found that kind of funny. I really got a kick out of all the pages that have like 2 dozen little tiny square ads on them.
Yes, some people call those the flea market ads.
That's a good choice to like describing them.
So many different things preying on their target audience of young boys, become an Atlas and an Adonis. And
I do remember a lot of these from that one Beetle Bailey comic book I had. And
Grant's comic book collection was one Beetle Bailey comic book.
And I know I'm not talking about this ad in particular, or this issue in particular, but when we were looking at the others yesterday, there was an ad for those Revolutionary War soldiers. And I remember thinking that picture was so cool. Thinking that must be the coolest thing of soldier toys ever. But, you know, I was like 5, so I didn't have any money. I couldn't buy them. And I never even thought of asking my parents to order something through the mail for me. I don't know why.
That was like freakish new technology.
It just never crossed my mind. But and then the Bubble Yum ad looked mildly familiar. I'm not sure if
that might be my mind tricking me. I don't know how the heck people read these things.
He's looking right now at the Johnson Smith.
I mean, I'm 44 years old now, and my eyes are not that bad.
So, like the joke and novelty ads, and they've crammed so many on there. The letters are super small.
It's like fine print. But so yeah, I always like seeing, you know, the quasi pop culture that's referenced, like the black hole here. I remember I didn't see that movie or anything, but I had a black hole school folder. That had a picture very similar to this one.
I love that. That's the ad that jumped out at me because I love the black hole. And it's an ad for models. You can get a model kit of Vincent Maximilian or the whatever the heck the name of the giant spaceship they're on. It's slipped my mind. But I'm a big models guy, and I like to see, like, oh my gosh, you could have had black hole models. That was really cool to me. But this episode isn't about me. It's about you.
I remember the strong arm stuff too.
Yeah.
So that was a nice little flashback to being a little kid.
Yeah, it's weird how... Isn't that interesting?
Especially the sea monkey. I was like, oh my God. And then I noticed yesterday the ad actually says that they're brine shrimp. So I guess I thought that was an ancient Chinese secret for you. Like,
it's neat. Isn't it? It's kind of neat, though, that Grant had one comic, but yet still the ads, like the sea monkey ads.
And I looked at that thing a lot, too. So yeah, I do remember.
Just really bring back memories. It's weird how those little ads just bring back memories for everybody. So that's really, really cool. All right, we've examined the issue quite thoroughly now. We've done art, we've done story, we've done ads. On the other side of this podcast promo break, we'll come back with our final thoughts. So check this other podcast out, and we'll be back in a minute.
To tell you the story of Green Lantern is to tell you the story of the birth of a universe, the origins of DC as a whole.
It's a magic emerald meteor from space in the 1940s.
It's the establishment of the JSA.
It's the birth of the Silver Age.
It's the introduction of a universal police force.
It's the formation of the JLA.
It's the emergence of the multiverse.
It's a crisis in both space and time.
It's an emerald dawn.
And it's an emerald twilight.
It's the brightest day.
And the blackest night.
And the Lantern Cast covers all of this and everything in between. We're Green Lantern's greatest advocates and fiercest critics. We've been fans for years, and it's the reason we're self-proclaimed Lanternologists.
So find us on iTunes and Stitcher, and give us a listen. Because the history of Green Lantern really is the history of the DC Universe. And we've got the interviews, commentaries, reviews, and more to back it up.
Welcome back from the break. I hope you enjoyed the ad for, you know, whatever that was for. Joe picks the ads.
I'm gonna go get me one of those.
Yeah. That sounds like a great podcast. Joe picks the ads, and Joe doesn't pick bad podcasts when he edits these things, so we're just going to rely on him. All right, we're pretty much at the wrap-up. We're going to get Grant's verdict on a couple of things. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the entertainment value of the book? You basically took 20 minutes or so out of your life to read it. 10 mean, hey, I really liked reading this. This was, you know, a great new experience. 1 being I really felt like I wasted my time. And I just did this as a favor for you to be on the show. And be honest.
Negative? No, I'm kidding. Probably a 6.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean... Because really and truly, I am very much a normie. Comics are not my thing, but I do appreciate them, and I like them, and I especially appreciate them as genuine art. You know, I think they get sort of slighted as artwork, and they genuinely are. And it was just cool to look at something I hadn't looked at in well over 30 years, and just kind of especially look at one that was over 30 years old as well. So that was, I had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So we're looking at Superman 350 through the eyes of Normie Grant Potts, and he says, about a 6 out of 10. I think we'll take it, especially for such a zany issue that this one ended up being. This is now the part of the show where I ask if you have any internet endeavors, which I know that you actually don't. He's not on social media.
No,
he does not Twitter.
I'm pretty
tweet.
Much a Luddite.
He does not
off the grid when it comes to the interwebs. Although I am on the Google, I really don't.
I've been trying to encourage him to SoundCloud his saxophone stuff, but we may get to that eventually. But yeah, normally this is where some of my guests will plug whatever they have. But a lot of times normies don't plug internet stuff, and that's fine.
You know what though? Can I plug one for a friend? A fellow teacher friend of mine does a podcast. I can't think of the name of it. It has something to do with the Suicide Squad. And it's one for pretty serious comic book folks. Like one episode can be like an hour and a half long. And he does it with some other guy that lives in another state. But my friend's name is Scott McClellan. And if you wanted to look it up, it's and he is ensconced in comic book culture, so he really knows his stuff.
Suicide Squad podcast.
Something about that.
Oh, very, very neat.
I actually feel bad. I should have thought about that before I got on.
Well, if you think of it, let me know, and I can do a separate audio file, and we can edit it in and say, hey, we remembered the name of the show.
Yeah, I'll try to do that.
We'll edit it in. Oh, that's neat, though. It's fun. I had to snicker a little bit when you mentioned, you know, he's into it, so it's like an hour and a half show. The Long Box Crusade show that I do with Pat Sampson, who also lives in another state, by the way. Our average show time's about 2 to 2.5 When we record, we record for about 5 hours, and then he edits it down. Because we're like a couple of kids. Yeah. Anyway, quick plug for my other show, The Long Box Crusade with Pat Sampson. Available on iTunes and at longboxcrusade.com. Anyway, let's not pump Pat's show too much here. We're here to the wrap-up of Superman 350. I want to thank Grant Potts for his time.
It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for being here. We may do this again. Grant is actually a little peek behind the curtain. Grant is actually kind of working his way through the entire Watchmen series. I got it for him for last Christmas, and he may finish that and come back and maybe be one of our first sort of not single issue but trade paperback guests. So that could be good times. We'll see if that happens. So as usual, this has been Comics with Normies. I'm your host, Jared Albrecht, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist. If you want to follow the show, we're on Twitter at Normies Podcast, N-O-R-M-I-E-S Podcast. If you want to follow me personally, I'm at Yard Sale Artist on Twitter. On Facebook, you can follow the show at Comics with Normies, or you can follow me personally at Yard Sale Artist. If you just can't get enough of listening to me talk, you can check out The Long Box Crusade with Pat Sampson, and I'm also have a couple other shows that I appear on the White Rocket Network. As you know, well, faithful listeners of the show will know, Comics with Normie appears on the White Rocket Entertainment Network, which you can go to find at whiterocket.podbean.com or search on iTunes for White Rocket Entertainment. You'll find Comics with Normies. You'll find the Quantum Leap TV show rewatch I'm doing with Van Plexico. You'll find the Babylon 5 show I'm doing with Van Plexico. You'll find the James Bond show I'm doing with Van and John Ringer. It's just a great place to be. So check out White Rocket Entertainment. And thanks for stopping by. You guys, we appreciate you being in the audience. And I tell you what I'll do. You guys keep reading comics, and I'll keep finding people who don't. Check you later. This episode's outro music is called Chase the Sea, and as always, it is by our very own sound engineer, Joe November. Joe is amazingly talented when it comes to making music, so please check him out on Twitter at josefflin99, that's at josefflin99, or do yourself a huge favor and head over to SoundCloud and check him out under the same handle, Joe November, josefflin99. You will not regret it. There is so much good music there. It's good times. As a reminder, folks, if you have any comments or questions, or if you just want to follow us on the social media, you can follow us over on Twitter at Normies Podcast, N-O-R-M-I-E-S Podcast. You can also follow me personally over on Twitter. I am at Yard Sale Artist. Or if you're more of a Facebook kind of person, you can follow us at Comics with Normies. That's our podcast page. Or you can follow me personally at Yard Sale Artist. Again, questions.